This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 376 for Thursday, October 1st, 2020. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Back this week is Megan Townsend. You can find her at Oh Megan Townsend on all the social media that matters, including Twitch. And I know that you've been streaming a fair bit lately. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good. It is a beautiful day. I know we are not supposed to talk about the weather, but seeing as the wind actually recorded last week on the podcast, I thought it'd be nice to let everyone know that it's back to normal fall sunny weather. I'm actually looking forward to going for a run after we record today, so it should be good. But I want to know a little bit more about how the streaming is going, because I've been doing a fair bit of it myself.
Yeah. Well, I'm still trying to like get back in the groove of it. I think a little bit, but I've been working on some stuff this morning. Actually, it's October, which means it's Halloween month. Today is the first of Halloween. So you heard me correctly. So I'm probably gonna be doing some like stream overlay changes just for Halloween time.
Spooktacular type and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm trying to figure out you know, new channel point redemptions and things like that. So, So it's been a lot of like back end work lately. I'm also trying to sort out a schedule, because now that my work schedule is pretty much like solidified, I've been working out and working and a consistent schedule these days. And I've been working the past week trying to figure out when the best times to stream would be. This week kind of just ended up being a bit of a weird one. So I haven't managed to really nail down any time yet. But probably next week you'll see a more consistent schedule from me. And then I'll post updates on Twitter. Honestly, Twitter is where you can find me the most, but if anything goes wrong or if anything changes, Twitter as well, I'll be updating if I do or do not stream. So
nice.
But yeah, it's been going well. I'm really excited to be back. I missed it a lot and it's been a lot of fun.
I've been streaming a lot, and I will be dialing it back actually in October to something a little bit more regular. There was that promotion in September called Subtember that we spoke about on the podcast a little while ago. I tried to take advantage of it. I tried to stream more often at various times, tried a couple of different games. I'll talk about one here in just a little bit. I did not see the success that promotion was supposed to, I think, bring. And I'm not laying that on necessarily the feet of the promotion, because of course I'm not a very big streamer, and you can't just stream more often and expect it to grow. Like, you have to do a lot more. But I did not see nearly even the average number of new subs. I saw a lot of resubs, which is fantastic, because I mean my community is fantastic, and there's a number of people that are hitting really fun milestones, like 9 months and 12 months for a lot of people, a couple of people into the 24 plus months of subbing, which is just phenomenal. But didn't see a lot of new recruits, which is whole idea behind the September promotion, right? Because it wasn't available for resubs, it was only new subs. But I have seen, and for anybody, I want to share this information just as a reminder for anybody that has seen this kind of data come through in a downward tick in September. And I'm laying it at the feet of the pandemic and back to school, because it's not just Twitch. It's also podcasts, podcast downloads, Patreon support, all of it. It is on a downturn. And I think, especially when it comes to something as simple as listening to a free podcast, when that's not happening, people are just busy, right? And it's kids that are back to school that are not watching your streams. It's parents that are busy managing kids that are back to school that are not listening to podcasts. Like, there's all that kind of stuff, all wrapped into one, complicated by COVID-19 worldwide. So don't get discouraged, anybody out there that had a rough September, because I did not, you know, it was about 2/3 of the way through the month when I was just like, this is not going the way that I wanted. And I realized, of course, that, you know, when I saw to see the data from other places, like I was kind of down on myself because of the whole Twitch numbers, but I was like, this doesn't feel very good. And then I started seeing the numbers everywhere else. I was like, oh, wait a minute. So it's not just me. It's not just my solo streams. It's other podcasts. It's like all this other stuff.
Right. Like,
okay. Right. So that's why I think it's, you know, less to be too self-conscious about and more about just like, well, you'll probably see it even a little bit, probably even have a little bit of an uptick come December when everybody's off for Christmas holidays, that kind of thing. But the other thing I wanted to mention is that I had a promotion myself personally on Twitch to do a Lego Let's Chat. And I think I mentioned this on the show. Maybe I didn't. But essentially,
not to me anyway.
Oh, okay.
We didn't have a conversation about
you
it.
And I have done the town hall before, which is available to the Citadel Cafe patrons, where we chatted about the podcast, where we wanted to go, like some different perks and stuff we want to do. And there's a town hall channel in the Discord as well, where it's mostly like meta talk. It's less about geeky stuff, more about like what is going to be good for the community, what could we do. That's where people say like, hey, like, there's a lot of tech chat. Can we maybe have a tech chat channel so that can be relegated to its own space? And so those kind of things come up all the time and we act on those quickly and stuff. But it's great to have that kind of like listener and community feedback section. And I thought a really good way to do that would be to do a Lego Let's Chat, which is, I call it a pilot stream because I don't know if I can make it a regular thing for a couple of reasons. One, if it doesn't perform very well, then why would I do it more often?
Exactly.
And two, I only have a handful of Lego sets. And once I'm done, there becomes a real world expense to doing regular Lego streams. And so the plan is to build a Lego set live on stream, which I've done before, actually. The VOD is long gone because it was a couple of years ago. But I have a number of sets here. I think about four. And I just point the webcam straight down at the dining room table and stream from there. And I have the long enough USB cord now that I can use my main computer, not a laptop or anything else. So I can actually have a decent stream. It would be no different than an art stream, like in terms of that kind of quality. So
didn't you say that someone like would put your Lego streams on and like fall asleep because it was like kind of like ASMR a little?
Yeah, I had a number of
like unintentional ASMR.
I have a friend that's really into ASMR and she doesn't follow any of the other content that I do because she's not into video games and she's not into like nerdy stuff. But she tuned into the Lego stream because I was simultaneously streaming, but then I was also posting like periodic photo updates to Instagram. And just being like, hey, done this so far. It was like, you know, some bored March evening, terrible weather in Nova Scotia. And I was like, well, this is what I'm doing this Saturday night. And she jumped into the stream and she's like, this is amazing. Like, I cannot get enough of this. And it was almost to the point where she was like, you can stop talking anytime you want. She would never say that, but she was kind of teasing me about that privately. Mm-hmm. Because what it was the clicking of all the Lego bits. And like sorting through the pile of Lego and having everything done. Because I when I build Lego, I it's called knolling. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term. But
no.
Lay out all the pieces first. So rather than going through this pile,
you empty the bag
and then you line everything up. And it sounds ridiculous, but it makes life way easier as you're building because you can see everything. It's also kind of therapeutic in terms of like lining everything up biggest to smallest, putting colors together, that kind of stuff. And it extends the Lego play experience, because when you're an adult and you realize that these things are a couple $100 and then you're done in 4 hours, you're like, shit, that was shit. Fun, but I wanted that to last a lot longer. So by taking your time and doing the knolling of each bag, it kind of extends that experience. And makes it more relaxing in my mind. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think about it's like side missions in video games, right? Like you can do the 14-hour story or you could spend 60 hours getting all the extras, right? And it depends on,
right.
There's two different kinds of people. I'm the kind of person that has all the side missions done before I finish the story. So like I'm that kind of Lego builder too. Like I tend to go in that direction. So, so I'm going to try and do that. Now the goal in September was if I hit 100 subs, I would do this Lego pilot stream, Let's Chat. Well, Well, I started off September at 70 something subs and I ended at 48. So I actually lost almost 50% of the subs during September. Mm. So I think a lot of them were gift subs that just didn't continue. And so, because around 50 is about what I would say normal for me. Like when I was someone to ask me how many subs you have, I'd be like, I don't know, 50, 60, something like that. And so where I am now is roughly about where I would expect to be, right? So what I think I'm going to do, and I think this is possible, I have to look into it, is I'm going to do the LEGO Let's Chat anyway, but it's going to be for subs only. So it's just going to be subscriptions on the channel. And then the VOD I'll post on Patreon, but also link that to just patrons. So it'll essentially be an audio town hall with LEGO, but two people that support, because those are the people I'm going to listen to the most, right? Those are the people that are financially supporting the projects. So when I'm taking feedback from the community as to what they want to see more of, what changes to the Discord they'd like to have, what other games they might want to watch me play on Twitch, that kind of stuff, I'm going to take it from the people that are financially supporting. Because I really want to do the Let's Chat, and I was really bummed that I didn't hit the goal and that I didn't unlock the LEGO thing. It's like, oh, I wanted to build LEGO in October. So I'm still going to do it. I'm just going to do it on a private thing. And I confess, I don't know enough about Twitch. For someone that's kind of using Twitch as a pretty solid side hustle right now, financially, I should know more about how to do private streams and use the platform a bit better than I do. So I'm going to use it as an excuse to educate myself. But so people can look forward.
Yeah, we're all learning.
Yeah.
I feel like Twitch is a very, very steep learning curve. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. And that's something that I've been learning. I have learned so much about like sound mixing and like live broadcast in general just from doing Twitch, and I still have not even touched the surface of what can be done, but it's very interesting. I mean, if you have like the drive to learn, you can do whatever you want, which is cool. But you know, it's a lot of like, you know, I think it's a lot of risk taking. It's like, you know, plugins and whatnot, like you have to download all sorts of things. If you, I mean, you don't have to, but like, you know, really all you need to stream is a computer, not even a camera. You can use, you have a computer and a game to play and a microphone. That's all you need to start. And it's, you know, it's relatively easy, but you know, to get a good production value that you can, there's, you know, if you want that, some people don't want that, which is totally fine. It's kind of what you make of it, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, I'm lucky in that I had already done podcasting for quite some time. And had a mic already. So rolling into streaming was actually something. And even then, like I was streaming on Justin TV before Twitch even bought it or it became Twitch, depending on how you want to.
Oh, wow. Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Back in like 2008, 2009, when I was launching Starcross, like I was drawing the comics live on a private page. I would just tweet it out and people would show up. It wasn't searchable so much. Like you couldn't just go and discover things, whereas like Twitch is so much better at discovering, you know, new people. Well, I'm discovering people, whether or not you actually want to follow those people, I don't know. Twitch recommends streams to me all the time where I go in and go, "Oh, no." not for me.
Oh, no.
This is a very short vocabulary. I'm going to move on. But
and
yeah.
that's okay though. Like not every streamer is going to be for everybody. And I think we have to like get out of there seems to be a mindset I've noticed where like, you know, oh, you have to follow every streamer. You don't.
Yeah.
You don't
have exactly.
to follow every streamer. Yeah. Like there's not enough time to follow every streamer. So like,
no,
you know, if you need to take a step back, that's okay. Like, you know, follow who you want to follow. It'll work.
Yeah. Oh, of course. My issue is I tend to have a hard time finding people I actually want to follow. That's my thing. Like I'll tune into anybody, but I don't tend to follow them very often. It's very, very, very seldom. I've actually found somebody the other day. I'm blanking on their name, which is unfortunate because it was just a quick share, but I shared it in the Discord. If you're in the No Man's Sky channel on my Discord, then I recommended a really chill streamer. Nice guy. And was just fun to kind of see someone that was talkative, but also not like over the top. Kind of fit in with the kind of experience that you might get with like myself or Steven ESC or Alistair McFly, like those people that part of our community, that kind of a vibe. So that was pretty cool. Speaking That's of cool. the community, we have a couple of emails this week, which is fantastic. I think it might be the first time that we've had two on the show. This first one comes from Anonymous. Again, adult-aimed anime and Among Us. Don't worry, it's not what you think. Joel and Fortunate Megan. I just listened to your most recent episode in which you mentioned how you wish there was animated series that were aimed at adults without being vulgar. Well, I just finished watching the new Dragon's Dogma series on Netflix about Seven Deadly Sins, and I'm currently breezing through Tokyo Ghoul. These are both anime series that I find fun and interesting to watch as they are short and have compelling plots. Though I definitely would not tag them as lighthearted, I still find them an easy watch while I have a spare minute. Also, I have recently been enjoying playing Among Us with my friends. I don't know if you've had any experience with this, but I'd love to hear about it if you do. Yours with a Lotus Biscuit, Anonymous again. I don't get the Lotus Biscuit reference. I'm assuming it's probably part of the anime series reference. We'll have links to Dragon's Dogma, Tokyo Ghoul, and Among Us in the show notes this week. I have only heard of Among Us. I did the SpongeChunks last week with Whip. And he was playing it with some friends and server mates and really enjoying it. I'm only kind of vaguely aware of what it is after doing a little bit of research before the show. And apparently it's like a multiplayer, kind of like a party game where you and up to 10 friends are trying to launch a spaceship. And randomly in your party, people are chosen to be saboteurs. And so they're going around sabotaging the spaceship and murdering crewmates. And you have to try to suss out who the saboteur is. So I don't know any tabletop games off the top of my head to name them, but I've heard of this kind of mechanic before where like you're playing a card game and some person is the snitch or some person is the, you know, the bad guy and you have to kind of figure out who it is.
It's a very simple concept.
Yeah. And it sounds really fun. I have seen countless memes from Among Us on Instagram and apparently they're very funny, but I don't get them because I don't play the game. But it's very simple. It's a 2D kind of like top-down sort of isometric game. But it seems to be really popular. I've seen a lot of people talking about it, a lot of people streaming it. So thanks for the recommendation there. Have you played it at all, Megan?
I haven't. I've seen my friend Sarah, Ceremony on Twitch. She plays it, and I've watched her play it, and it's very funny. I think Anna the Dev mentioned it at one point.
Yeah, she did.
She called it like it's kind of like a game of tag, and one person, but it's like someone's like a murderer or like you said, a saboteur, and they no one knows who it is except for the actual person. So the whole point is to guess who it is and try and stop them. So it's kind of like a little murder mystery. While the murderer is like going around actively trying to kill people. So like, you know that you're going to be killed. You got to figure out who the murderer is before you get killed. And one of the ways I've seen some people, they do like Let's Plays on YouTube. Whenever someone gets killed, they have to stop talking. They're not allowed to like say anything else. They're essentially like silenced for the duration of the game. So if someone calls out to them, they can't answer. They're like, oh no, they're dead. Because oftentimes, like, they're not playing together in the same room. Sometimes you don't see each other on the map and there's no notification that someone has been killed. Oftentimes you just show up and, like, you find their body. Or, like, if you call out to them, it's like, hey, where are you? And they don't answer. They're just like, oh no, they're gone. And it's a way to keep, you know, giving the murderer's identity away to just keep the game fun. But it looks very hilarious. I would like to give it a go. I haven't tried it yet, but it's become very highly recommended. I just have to make sure it's something that I can sink the time into right now.
Yeah, it's cheap. It's only $5.69 Canadian on Steam. And I don't know the exact mechanic, but apparently even after you die, there are still things for you to do before the round is over. So it means that when you're out, you're not just sitting there twiddling your thumbs until the round is over and there's a winner declared. So that's really fun. Have you heard of or seen Dragon's Dogma or Tokyo Ghoul?
I've heard of Dragon's Dogma. I haven't watched it yet, but it did come up on my radar on Netflix. It kind of looks similar to Dragon Prince, but like slightly more anime style. So it's kind of like in that in that sort of 3D realm from what I can see. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong. That's what the cover art looks like. But it looks like something that might be up my alley just because it's, you know, fantasy dragons. I'm super into that. So I'm definitely going to check it out. I am familiar with Tokyo Ghoul, though. I have watched some of it. I didn't finish it because it didn't really do much for me. It's kind of like a zombie story. So this guy gets bitten by a ghoul and turns into a ghoul himself. The thing with ghouls versus zombies is that ghouls apparently keep some, like, they're cannibals, but they retain their human intellect. So they're very self-aware. So they're aware that they're hunting people. They kind of become a little bit more malicious, whereas zombies are like mindless. Ghouls are more self-aware and choose to eat people because it's the only thing they can eat and sustain themselves. It wasn't really my thing. Doesn't mean it's not great. The designs are really neat. But it was definitely kind of in the period. It came across my radar when I was in a period of like not wanting to watch a lot of anime for a while. And just it didn't really strike me as something that, you know, I would enjoy sitting down and watching. In terms of like adult recommended anime that, I mean, I've said this before already, I still highly recommend Castlevania. It's very elegant, and I think it's kind of what got me slowly back into anime, but it's also very palatable for people who don't like anime because it's not over dramatic. It doesn't have the very long stretched faces. There's no yelling, like, you know, the anime style yelling. It's not like, you know, over the top or like overacted or anything. It's a very very beautiful, elegant animation style. It's very well acted. It's very, a lot of it is very soft spoken. And it's almost like a political drama. Like, there is some, like, you know, action, but it's kind of more within the realm of like Cowboy Bebop action, not like, you know, long stretchy bodies sort of action. So it's definitely, I would say it's anime light. It's definitely anime in style, but much more, again, elegant. That's the only word I can think of, because it is a very elegant looking show. Like, everyone is drawn, like all the women are drawn with very soft faces and very like flowing hair. All the men are drawn like, you know, with angular features and like broad shoulders. And it looks very beautiful. So I would, if, you know, for you, Joel, especially, I would highly suggest giving it a look, especially because it's more Americanized than the standard anime.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's more in line with like Korra, without the comedic value. It's not definitely not funny. It's definitely not for children. It's definitely a much darker, sadder story. But it's got the same elements of like design, but even prettier than Korra. So highly recommend.
Nice. I'm looking at some of the designs from Tokyo Ghoul, and it looks creepy.
Mm-hmm. It's creepy. It's a creepy one.
The whole face mask with like zipper teeth thing.
Great designs. It's got wonderful design. It's just not my thing. Vibe
to it. It's like,
yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Next email comes in from Legomania. I love to draw and game. I was the person who wrote in about Recorded by Aerosol. I am super happy that I inspired the main topic for one of your episodes. Regarding mobile games, I was wondering what mobile games you have played. I have a couple recommendations. Castle Pals, a tough 2D platformer, which is free on mobile and $5 on PC and console. And Lost in Harmony, a level-based forward-facing runner rhythm game with a story about two lovers separated, and you play through the one lover's dreams based on what his girlfriend texts him. Drowning in nerddom, Legomania. Thanks very much for the recommendations. I've looked up the links for Castle Pals and Lost in Harmony. We'll have website links to those in the show notes today as well. I actually don't play mobile games. I used to. There was one or two that I dabbled in, but it was nothing too serious. Things like Words with Friends and stuff like that didn't last very long. Mostly I use my phone for social media and phone. I've just never been that much of a mobile gamer. I also have a very small phone. So, it's just never been a thing. Cause it just, it's, why would I do it when I can sit and play like Xbox at the television or something like that? I no longer have to commute. Like, I've been working from home for 10 plus years. So, you know, if I was still spending a lot of time on the bus with a phone that had a battery life that wouldn't die every time I played a game, then I would definitely look into it. I realized after writing the notes for this that there was a more recent mobile game that I did look into. But again, did not stick with it because of the very poor battery life with it. And that was Minecraft Earth. I looked at that for the SpongeChunks podcast. Both Johnny and I did quite an in-depth look at it when it first came out. Not for me, still a very cool experience, but it wasn't compelling enough for me to look more into it because I basically could not play for more than 15 minutes before my phone would just turn off. I was like, all right, well, this is neat, but not really how I want to spend my time. However, again, if I was like sitting on a bus for an hour every day, I would totally be playing something like Minecraft Earth or something for sure. So I unfortunately don't have any mobile games to recommend. But thanks for sending in those. We'll pass those on to everyone. Megan, do you have any mobile games that you like?
I'm like you, I'm not much of a mobile gamer, but one of them that kind of, you know, came across my radar was Monument Valley. I love Monument Valley. It's very easy to play. I think I played the whole thing in like maybe 45 minutes, but it's a perspective puzzle game. So you can't move the camera at all, but everything is perspective based. So it kind of looks like a weird, you know, you kind of have to look at things in a very different way. You play as a little tiny character all dressed in white named Ida. It is kind of hard to see at some points, but she stands out a lot because she's like the only white thing on the screen. The puzzles get progressively more complicated, like, you know, more toggles you have to turn and like things like switches, knobs you have to move around. And you have to like guide Ida through the path so she can get to like these altars, essentially. The music is beautiful, and a lot of what you do to control the game is reflected in the music cue. So the music will change, like you'll have like a little boop sound that kind of comes up that is in time and in the same tune as the music based on what you touch, and it's kind of really cool. Not much of a story, but it's very sweet and very weirdly emotionally charged. Like I felt a lot of emotion playing it, but it was in a good way. So highly recommend. It's wherever you download games. And then there was another game that I played a while ago that I kind of stopped playing because it was a hell of a time sink, but it was called Terra Genesis, and it was basically like you have to terraform Mars to be a livable planet, and it's like a balancing game of like, you know, is your oxygen level okay, is your enough population, enough water,
resource management,
resources, yeah. With time, yeah, time essentially
management. Yeah.
And it was cool. It wasn't very exciting, so it was good to kind of play, you know, on the go, and you would just watch an ad every once in a while to get more points, but that was pretty much it.
Well, speaking of stuff we've been playing, I will kick off the main discussion this week with the big bad. We've mentioned this a couple of times on the Citadel Cafe before. No Man's Sky is back in my rotation. The Origins update dropped last week, and I decided to check it out because this is a 3.0 patch. They've moved up a whole number, and it's a larger patch than No Man's Sky has been dropping in the previous months. I want to point out, too, that it's been really cool that No Man's Sky has been dropping updates in the past few months. I fell off playing in summers in February, not because anything bad happened. I just ended up being more interested in things like Minecraft and Satisfactory. And I don't seem to have more time than two games, right? Like I got Minecraft as my main, and I have time to rotate in one other thing. And back for most of the winter, it was Satisfactory. But No Man's Sky, having another update, I decided to check it out. And in the Origins update, they dramatically expand the universe and add stranger, richer, and more varied things with deeper planetary diversity, dramatic new terrain, and a host of new creatures, new weather conditions, colossal buildings, and much more. So far, what I find so compelling about the update is you don't have to go far to find new things. If you've been living on a solar system, I'm about... on a solar system, on a planet in a solar system. I'm about 70 hours into No Man's Sky, but I fart around a lot. Like I haven't been hardcore doing missions and following story. I've just been kind of like exploring and having my own fun. And as a result, I have explored the system I'm in, a couple of other neighboring systems, located at a number of planets. Even the place where I built my starter base is different. They made a really cool decision in that they didn't change the geology. So they didn't change how the planet looks in terms of its land masses and that kind of stuff of a planet that you're already on, because that might end up wrecking someone's base or changing something. But they added new flora and fauna, so new plants and wildlife. So even just outside of your front door, I was like, what's that noise? That sounds a lot bigger than anything I've ever heard around here. Sure enough, something the size of a buffalo walked by. I was like, oh, that's new. And it was on my home planet. I had to walk no further than just out my front door of my base to find something new. They also have added a number of these new types of planets. And they added one within the system. So smart idea. Again, they've added planets to already discovered systems. So you don't have to go traveling all over hell and high water looking for new content. Chances are there's some new content right on your doorstep. Now, whether or not it's good new content, therein lies the RNG of No Man's Sky. Like, did you get a dead planet or did you get a tropical paradise? You know, the odds of one over the other are up to the game. But it's something new that you can at least go check out. I've seen a couple of other tweaks to existing planets. Like one of the planets in my system is now a bioluminescent planet. So it looks wicked cool at night because it turns into basically Pandora from Avatar. Not as much tree cover. That's like cool. It's not that deep. It's mostly mushrooms and stuff. But still, the grass, the mushrooms, and some of the trees, they all light up. And it really just makes it feel like a fun alien planet. My biggest complaint about No Man's Sky, and I'll take this quote from Johnny, my co-host on the Spunchunks. He's also dabbled in the game. He doesn't like it when the algorithm shows and you see like the same weird looking quadruped walk by with a teeny tiny head. And it's like, this is just, it's yes, technically it's different than the thing that I saw in the other solar system on the other planet. But this is the fifth time that I've seen something like this. And it makes a little sense when you've traveled across star systems and you land on a planet and it's just yet another four-legged thing with big hips and a big barrel chest and a tiny little gerbil head. Like, and you see it all the time. And
yeah,
they've added a number of new varieties of animals and things. I've seen some weird stuff. And I mean that in a you kind of have to think outside the box with No Man's Sky. Like, I had this thing that I thought was a bird because it looked like it was had wings, and I realized it was not a bird at all. It was a crystalline structure that rotated like a drill. And so like a flying fish would jump out of the water on Earth, it was drilling through the soil and then jumping into the air and then drilling back down into the soil. And to the layman, it looked like a mineral deposit. It didn't look like an animal. So it's weird. Like, some of the stuff that they've added is weird. And I'll give them a tip of the hat for that because it's not another gerbil. I've been doing something that I should have done originally. And if anybody does pick up the game, and if you're new to it, or if you only played a few hours because you weren't sure about it, do the story missions. And I'm currently doing not the main story, but the base story, the player story missions, where you have to hire a couple of aliens to be construction scientist and weapon specialist. And they all have their different personalities. You know, there's the Gek, there's the Viking, and then there's the Korvax. I like the Korvax the best. Korvax are kind of like the synthetic, kind of like, they're kind of like Data, you know, like they're an android type, you know, personality. Nice. And then the Gek are weird little strange commerce and trade focused bird-like frog creatures. It's strange. And then the Viking are essentially Klingons. They're just all about war and honor and death and afterlife and all this kind of stuff. And they're funny because they call you something diminutive, like, you know, imposter or small. Like, they usually refer to you in some sort of diminutive way. And it's like how they greet people, because it just immediately puts them on the upper hand. It's like, hello, small one, like that, yes, that kind of a stuff. So I've been going through those missions. And what's nice about it is that, again, I'm not going out of my way to find new stuff. I'm just doing these missions. And because I'm doing these missions, I'm just finding new stuff along the way. We found this ugly fungal planet. It was nothing but giant mushrooms and yellow smog. And it was disgusting. Until a sandworm the size of a skyscraper came out of the ground and scared the crap out of me live on stream. Like, and it, I mean, I didn't jump, but it was just like, oh, okay, what's that? That's not hurting us. That's just a feature. Man. It's a feature, not a bug. You know, it's like, but the whole world was shaking. It's like, what is going on? So that kind of stuff is neat. So having those kind of experiences, I think, outweigh the drawbacks, which are basically, you know, there are some bugs. I worked all stream yesterday to unlock a new Indium drive, which will allow me to travel to farther systems. And those systems, because it takes a lot of work to get the Indium drive, those systems tend to have a higher probability of having cooler planets on them, that kind of stuff, from what I can tell. And I went to install the Indium drive, and I couldn't do it, despite having all the parts for it. And Skulldaisy Gimp in my community and mod in my Twitch chat said, actually, that's a bug. It usually goes away when you restart the game. But I was streaming, so I didn't want to like stop the stream and restart the game. And it was at the tail end. But it kind of like ripped the rug underneath me from my immersive experience that I've had going planet to planet and collecting cadmium and emerald and all this kind of stuff and seeing glowy mushrooms. And we saw some really cool stuff. Like we saw what looked like a cross between a deer and a dinosaur. And it was weird in a cool way. And it looked proportional. Ooh. Like it looked like a real animal, you know? And so seeing stuff like that was cool. We left the planet right before a firestorm came in and the temperature went to 370 degrees Celsius. And I was like, okay, time to go.
All right. That's it. Bye.
Yeah. Bye. So it's one of those things that, you know, you can get lost in it, but then these glitches come up where you're just kind of like, oh, right. This is still very much a game in progress. And No Man's Sky just kind of raised that question of like, how much of a gaming experience do you want where it's done? It shouldn't have any bugs. The intention is for it to be a single purpose, you know, experience, and that's it. Or where I'm more used to this kind of stuff with Minecraft, a game like No Man's Sky and Minecraft, where it's just constantly in development. They're just squashing bugs. And if they waited until it was done to release it, it would just never be released because that's just the nature. That's just the nature of the beast, right? Because for those of you that don't know, No Man's Sky is a cumulative single universe. Everyone plays together in the same universe. It's just so bloody big that you don't often run into anybody else. And so if you want to, though, like I could send my base coordinates to you, Megan, and if you wanted to ever play, then you could come and we could play together. You just need...
That's cool, though.
You just need the stellar coordinates to get there. And then once you're here. And we can do all kinds of stuff together. And that's really cool. You know, so it's one of those things where like you can do a lot with it. And it had a very bumpy launch 4 years ago, but since has done an awful lot to kind of recoup. And they're trying to find that balancing act between the procedurally generated, you get what you get. Most people complain that that's pretty boring all the time, even though that's kind of how the universe looks. I mean, like, look at all the planets in our solar system. You can only live on one of them. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just us. There are, not that we know of, but there's no life on any of the other planets that we can tell. So, you know, the chances of you finding these cool, amazing, you know, sci-fi planets from the movies in No Man's Sky is pretty slim. And what they're doing with this update by introducing new types of planets kind of increases the potential for at least something cool to be found. And it feels a little bit more exciting. So if you're on the fence, you know, I would maybe suggest checking it out, especially if you already own the game. It costs you nothing to go check it out. There's lots to do, but I would definitely encourage you to try the starter missions and stuff first. Have you ever played it? Have you ever watched it played?
No, I haven't. Colin's definitely mentioned it to me before, but I haven't actually sat down and delved into it. I don't have a lot of time to game. When I game, it's on stream. And the only thing that I've really been playing right now is Spiritfarer.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that then.
I love Spiritfarer a whole lot. Again, Colin introduced me to it. It is... It's referred to as a cozy management game about dying, which sounds very sad, but honestly, it is one of the most feel-good games I've played in a really long time. Because you're kind of like reuniting with old friends and old people from your past. Your uncle, you run into your childhood friend Gwen. Apparently, there's a, I don't know what the relation is yet. It hasn't quite gotten there, but there's a woman named Summer that apparently somehow knows your character's mom. And I don't quite know what the relation is yet, but she recognizes you. I don't know her. And their spirits manifest themselves as animals. So it's got some really fun, like, you know, animal style characters that all have a very, very unique design. They all have a very, very different silhouette, which is nice. And part of the management is to, like, make them happy. So they'll come to you and it's like, hey, do you mind if you build me a house? I plan on being on your boat for a little while. I'll start from the beginning. The story is that you are a character named Stella. You wake up on a boat and Charon, who is the ferryman from the underworld, is essentially retiring. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to give you my boat. And you're now the new Spiritfarer, and you can kind of go about it however you want to go about it. And he's like, you know, this big hulking figure in a cloak, and he seems very scary, but the music is very peaceful. And you know, he is a very, very soft voice. It's usually just like grunts and things, but in the beginning he says your name, like your character's name is Stella. You have a cat named Daffodil. And it's just a very like nice, cozy game. That's just, there's no stakes really. I think the only stakes are, you know, at some point you can go through like these little clouds of like nightmarish, you know, purpleness, and you have like jellies there, and jellies, you know, you just jump on them. You can't get hurt. You can't die. You just jump on them and collect, you know, the things that they give you when you hit them. And that all you do by hitting them is just jump up and you just collide with them, and then you're fine. And, you know, they just pop out money, essentially. So there's no risk. There's no way to die. It's just very, very chill. And each of the characters have like different needs. So like you get to give them a hug every day, which is very nice. And like the way it's animated is that the hugs look so cozy. It's like the nicest looking hug I've ever seen in a game. It's very soft, and everyone just gets right in there, and it's like a big old bear hug, and it's just very nice and warm fuzzies. And And I haven't gotten to this point yet, but I watched the trailer, and the trailer actually made me cry a little bit. Like, it actually got me a little choked up, because there's a thing. It's like, you know, you have to learn to say goodbye. Like, eventually you've helped the spirit kind of like finish all the business that they needed to finish before they needed to pass through, you know, through the other side, like through the gate, essentially, to the afterlife. And, you know, you don't see them again, and it's very sad. So it's like learning how to say goodbye to people. So reuniting with people and then learning how to eventually say goodbye. So it feels like it's going to be very cathartic. Right now, it's still very fun. So like, you know, I'm still, you know, watering plants, and I'm still, you know, giving people hugs and making people coffee in the morning, and, you know, making sure that people have snacks and food and that they're otherwise in a good mood. The music is, I can't, like, I love game music so much, but this one has like, it feels very folksy and almost like Celtic in a way without being obnoxious. It sounds like a fantasy soundtrack, and it's beautiful. It's so, so nice. And I can't get over how just cute the game is. And it looks like traditional animation. I don't know if anyone's seen it before. Have you seen it? Have you?
Oh yeah, I've been playing it before. I've popped in when you've been playing, and I've popped in. I've seen it played on a couple of other, like, other streamers that I follow. I've also played it. And I'm looking at some screenshots right now. And you're right. It looks like an animated show. Like closest thing that I would say without it being, it doesn't look too anime, but it would remind me of something like Avatar the Last Airbender, with, you know, cell shaded, like very flat colors, nice bright beautiful character designs, but then they have slightly more painterly backgrounds, you know, where the rocks and trees and leaves would have more texture and stuff to them, where then the characters that are moving obviously don't have a lot of texture. They just have like your costume designs and flat character you know, stuff. But
everything is very fluid.
Yeah, like, and the imagination,
like, it moves very fluidly.
Yeah. So it's less of a sprite based game. Like, you think about sprite based, you think like Mario, you know, like when he jumps, there's like a couple of poses between like standing and jumping, but this, there's a lot of anticipation and follow through and floatiness to it, and like you said, softness to it. A lot of softness to it. Everything kind of has like a secondary action. So like when a character turns around, the feathers on their head would move, the tail would settle, I noticed specifically because I was watching you while I was cooking, so it's kind of like half one eye half in the stream, both ears listening, but like I was only looking over every once in a while. And the ambient animations that the cat was going through when you were talking to someone, and the cat was just kind of like doing its own little thing, playing with some little glow ball or whatever. And they're obviously like little cycles, but it's obviously, you know, well thought out, well put together. I would hazard a guess that the people working on it are, you know, they used to work in television or film, you know, before they moved into games would be my guess.
Most likely.
It has that kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it has that kind of attention to detail in the animation that comes from people that just love animation, you know, rather than just trying, they're not just trying to get stuff done for a game to be complete. Like part of the game is for people that love animation is my takeaway.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely why I really like it. And I also found out that Thunder Lotus is the developer of the game. They're a Canadian based game dev company.
Nice.
I don't know where they're based. I think it's either Vancouver or Toronto, which seems like the two most likely
options. Yeah, so more it's likely.
50-50 toss up between those two. But it is a beautiful game. And I would highly suggest playing it. I will be playing it on stream at some point, probably to the next little bit, because it's the only thing that's really been like, you know, I've been chomping at the bit to play it for a while. Like, and I don't really get that way with games very often. So I'm excited to delve more into it and unlock more of the story, because there is more story. It's a simple story, but there is a story, and each character has their own story. And I'm excited to learn more about the characters and meet new characters, because I know there's more than what I've already, I've already met. I have three of them on my boat right now, and I'm sure there's at least three or four more.
Nice.
So I'm excited to get into it.
They're in Montreal, by the way.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah. I was totally off.
I should have actually realized that. I actually worked with the CHRC a number of years ago.
And in doing that,
I also learned about how much game development was happening in Montreal, and I should have remembered that that was a hub in
that's,
the country.
That's okay.
But very, very cool stuff. For me on the big screen, and I don't have a whole lot to say about this because I've mentioned it on the show before. I have been rewatching The Lord of the Rings. I'm also in the same week, I've sort of decided I think I want to upgrade my television this fall because my large 45 inch Sony Bravia died like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago now. And I got a loaner replacement for my mom that she just told me to keep. And it's like a 37 inch, it's still 1080p, but it's small and it's not super great. The audio on it sucks. So I've been watching with headphones, and I've been putting off rewatching The Lord of the Rings because I did not have a big screen. I usually watch it about once a year, usually sometime in the winter time, you know, when it's cold and miserable and there's not a lot to do outside. And it's just a good series to watch. I have the extended edition on Blu-ray, which is, in my opinion, the only way to watch The Lord of the Rings. Because I have seen them on Netflix, and I actually started watching one of them a while ago on Netflix just because I can't remember. I think it was the last time I had like a really bad head cold. I was just sick for the day and started to really notice all the missing scenes. It's like, oh, right. I'm just so used to the Blu-rays. And it's not like they're big scenes, just these little character moments throughout the entire series of films that spring to mind. So I started to rewatch the Fellowship. I want to say it's been a couple of weeks now. I was going to wait until I was done to mention it here on the show. And I've been watching it in really small chunks. I've not really had the time or the attention span lately to sit down and watch like a full 2 to 3 hour film. I've been basically just, I mean, Blu-ray, it's home. I can start it and stop it whenever I want, minus the fact that I forgot how long it takes to load a Blu-ray. and the non-skippable trailers at the beginning. Some things I don't miss about physical media. But what I also don't miss is things like Netflix or Amazon or any of the other streaming services buffering when I'm trying to watch something. And so this is always 1080p and always the right sound, you know, sync with the, you know, with the video. Like there's nothing is off about it. There's no pixelation ever because it's a Blu-ray. My only complaint, like I said, is that I'm using headphones and I don't have a decent stereo setup and my television is small. So I will more than likely rewatch it again on a much bigger TV. But boy, do these films stand up because I've been watching a lot of...
Oh my God, they're so good.
A lot of films over the last little while, and you and I have spoken before in the podcast about being picky about new shows and new content. I guess the closest that we've received in the last little while has been Game of Thrones, but the end of that was so crappy that it just left such a bad taste in your mouth that people just don't even refer to it anymore. No one talks about Game of Thrones anymore. Nobody.
No, it's just too depressing to talk about it. Exactly. Like, it was like the best television event for like years.
And then years.
The ending was just so disappointing.
Yeah.
So disappointing.
So with Lord of the Rings, it's so familiar for me, and it just always feels like a walk in the woods. And I think it's just because the Fellowship starts off in like the Green Shire, and the soundtrack is just so poignant and something so I should listen to more often. I often don't listen to it because of how often I usually watch the Lord of the Rings, because I want that experience with the film. You know, I don't want to over listen to stuff. And I really, really enjoyed getting into the film. And maybe I should have waited until next year, because the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship, was released in 2001.
Wow. That's right? Like 19 years ago.
Next year is the 20th anniversary of The Lord of the Rings. 20 years and this film is still better than most things that are made right now.
Wow.
I say that knowing and realizing I very much enjoyed the Marvel series of movies. Like, I'm not saying that those are bad at all. But anything outside of those franchises, I've not had a lot. Like, even Star Wars. I wasn't a big fan of the latest Star Wars films, you know, compared to The Lord of the Rings, which again, 20 years ago, still stands up. So I've just been really getting lost in this. And some of the things, especially with the world at large right now, some of the things that are sticking out is, obviously, when Tolkien was writing it, there was a lot of references and allegory to like world war, environmentalism, yeah, like all this kind of stuff, industry. The world was changing basically when he was penning The Lord of the Rings. But some of my favorite quotes, of course, are from the Fellowship. And Bilbo, of course, saying, "I don't know half of you half as well as I should like, and I like less than half of you half as well as you deserve," is something that I resist saying almost every day on social media. like it's at the tip of my tongue. I can't overuse it because then it's not nearly as poignant. But it's at some point, pretty much daily, I've been just like, I should say that to so many people. it's always there. And I think another one, and this is one that really kind of stood out to me, was, it's something that Gandalf says, but it's in response to, "I wish it need not have happened to me, happened in my time," is something that Frodo says to Gandalf. In the movie, they're in Moria when they're having this conversation. They're talking about Gollum, I think. But in the in the film, the Frodo quote that leads into the Gandalf phrases, "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened." And Gandalf says, "So do I, and so do all who live to see such times, but it is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us." And given how frustrating it can be, I think, in all of the world events that have been happening in 2020, I just thought that it's funny how a 20-year-old movie and an even older book, right?
Yeah.
That still rings true. You know, like, no matter what crisis you're dealing with, like, there's only so much you can do. And as long as you're doing it, then you have to be content with that. And I feel like it's such a nice reminder of what, you know, how terrible things can be, but how bright they can be on the other side, and how to weather storms. Like, there's just a lot of stuff to it. I might even though I have just finished watching the films, I feel like I might reread the books. It's been a while, and I know I'm going to regret the decision as soon as I get to Tom Bombadil, but I might reread the books this winter, because it's been a long time. And and while I agree that I think it's, I can't remember her first name. Her last name is Walsh. It's Peter. Why am I blanking on his name? The director of Lord of the Rings. That's terrible.
Peter. Oh no.
That's awful. I'm completely blank Jackson. Jeez. Jackson. Peter Jackson.
Wow. I knew it was like a name. Like,
yeah.
Like,
I think it's Fran Walsh, I think might be his wife. But they wrote the films, and I think they did a bang up job of translating the films to translating the books to film. And I'm a little worried about going back and reading the books, in that I remember liking them, but thinking that there were some parts where just like, oh gosh, this is really, really, really long. But then again, I also read Game of Thrones. So in comparison, maybe The Lord of the Rings is going to be like a cakewalk. But yeah, like there's so many good moments in the film. It's kind of hard to talk about all of them at once. But another really good moment from The Two Towers. I think one of my favorite things about the whole trilogy is the Helm's Deep situation. That's usually like one of my favorite moments in rewatching the films. And Bernard Hill, who plays Theoden, has that fantastic charge speech when they're all hope is kind of lost, and Aragorn convinces him to ride out with him, and in a fell deeds awake, you know, now for wrath, now for ruin, and the red dawn, and like, you know, music goes and they run out the front door and trample all the shit disturbers, and like, yeah, it's just, it's stuff like that has it just has fantastic moments. And even the special effects, when you know that it's all like digital orcs, and you know, the horses aren't real, because that would be really dangerous to do on a horse and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It holds up. You know, there's only a few moments, and only because you know that they wouldn't do that to a real horse, where you go, okay, well, that was really cool CG. You know, like in the Battle of Pelennor, when like the Oliphants are stepping on horses, you're like, okay, well, that's obviously not a real thing. But
no,
right up until the moment when that horse got stepped on, it was a real dude on a horse. And then they, you know, they probably swapped it out. Like, there's just some moments where, same with the Rohirrim, when Rohan arrives. And it's not all real horses, but anything immediately in that foreground shot is all horses. And there's a couple hundred. Like, it's some of the things that they've not done in films since, you know, in terms of the grand scale of things. And I had a really good time with it. I'm glad that I got into watch it. I wanted something nostalgic. I wanted something I didn't have to think about. And so I was basically just watching every night at dinner and stopping roughly whenever I finished eating. So I was watching 30 to 40 minutes at a time. I would stop at like the next good place to stop. So like, you know, the Battle of Pelennor happens, and then it kind of, there's the aftermath, and then there's the stuff with like Eowyn and Faramir, and then they switch to Gollum and Sam and Frodo, and that's when I would pause it and be like, all right, it's been 45 minutes.
Right, because it's like an episode at that point.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, and it works. It really, really works. Because, again, they're so long. Like, even sitting down to watch The Return of the King is something like 4 hours, like, if you really wanted to. it's a lot. But, yeah. How long has it been since you've seen them?
I think it's been, like, at least a year and a half, 2 years now. But I've been, like, feeling it. I've been gearing up to, like, watch it again. Lord of the Rings has been one of my favorite movies since I was like 12. And I think I like Fellowship of the Ring the most, because it's like I think it's got the best score, in my opinion. I mean, like, it has like the really iconic, like, you know, like, it's got that really, really iconic, like, Hobbits, like, concerning Hobbits theme is what it's called. And it's, I don't know. It just, it starts off with like, so much hope for adventure, for like a good adventure. So it kind of gives me like fun D&D vibes a little bit. And then everything gets terrible towards the end, because everything is very dramatic. But no, I think it's Fellowship is definitely my favorite. I as you said, those movies still hold up. They still hold up in special effects as well. Like everything just looks so clean. And I mean, I haven't gone and looked at them you know, again in the last like 2 years, so like, maybe I'll change my tune if I watch them again. Like, maybe there might be some like weird Gumby effects of like, you know, someone getting squashed or something, but it doesn't feel unforgivable either, you know what I mean? Like,
there are some shortcomings in it, but the effects in The Lord of the Rings are better than The Hobbit. Much better.
Yes. Yeah. And you could tell, the thing with The Hobbit, there's a really interesting YouTuber, her name's Lindsay Ellis, and she does like a breakdown of The Hobbit, and why it makes her mad, because she loved the book, but the whole movie, while it's good and while it looks nice for the most part, I don't know. It's just, it's lacking the same heart and soul that the original trilogy had. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like there was something that you could tell that everyone, it was the same crew who was working on The Hobbit as they were on the original trilogy. And you could tell by the end that they were just all so tired. Like there didn't seem to be as much joy or as much, you know, love put into it. Like there was so much literal love put into the original trilogy. And what, you know, gets me every time when I think about it is that it almost didn't get made. It was a huge risk for studios to even consider making something that was like such a high fantasy of the scale, because it wasn't popular at the time, and it essentially popularized high fantasy media. And they did not expect it to do well at all. So the fact that it got the budget that it got and the fact that it looked the way it did is honestly nothing short of a miracle, because I you know, when you look back at like all the, you know, information surrounding it back then, it was like, whoa, this is pretty lucky that this got made. But I love it. It's kind of, it's, I can't even describe how much it makes me happy. Like it just genuinely makes me very, very happy. And I feel like it's the one piece of like long-term media content that hasn't been tainted by something bad in some way. You know what yeah. I mean? Like we've had yep. Harry Potter that's just been completely destroyed
yeah.
because of J.K. Rowling, and that guts me to the core. But like it feels like, you know, going back to the Shire just kind of feels like you're going home to meet some friends still.
Yeah.
And that is nice. That's a nice feeling to still have something that's good in this world that hasn't been tainted by shitty. I mean, I don't know if Tolkien was, you know, I don't know about his nature as a person.
Right.
But at that point you can invoke death of the author. He's not getting money for it anymore. I don't think his estate is getting money for it anymore because, you know, I think the rights have just been bought out at this point.
Well, and also too, you know, like, and if anything ever came out that was really, we'll say scandalous, say about Tolkien, a lot of it could even just be like, well, product of his time. I mean, it was 100 years ago, yeah. You know, and, yeah, and I'm not saying yeah. that's forgivable, but it's understandable, right? Like, yeah. you know, that kind yeah. of stuff. And I think that's part of, you know, when you're saying, you know, things like that get tainted, and it's part of, I think part of it is that we just didn't have that kind of media. We didn't have that kind of coverage about all that kind of stuff. So that, and I think too, that because the story is relatable on so many levels, you know, like in terms of the things that it talks about, afterlife, war, industrialization, yeah. division among men, like, and mankind, I should say, like stuff like that. It you know, just evil that is evil for the sake of being evil. There is no reason behind it. They never explain why Sauron is an evil SOB. That's it.
He's just evil.
Sauron is just it's just bad. That's just it. You know, like it's just
a bad man.
Exactly. And in a way, I remember being really disappointed in the first time reading the books, because the first time I read the books was 20 years ago. And I was a much younger person. I was just like, I was kind of disappointed that the big bad wasn't like an actual big bad, you know, like just he never actually manifests. Right. Cause they win before yeah. he can get to it. Right. The whole idea, like I grew up with Darth Vader. I was expecting to see Darth Vader, and you never see Darth Vader. Right. He never shows up. I mean, because yeah. it's just the evil is more of a, it's a bigger idea in the Lord of the Rings than I at first grasped, which I of course get right. now. Cause there's been so many memes over the last 20 years, as well, which is just funny. But like there are some things about it that I think just stand the test of time. And it just, I remember thinking when I was watching it, it feels like a film, even though I'm sure it was done digitally. It just feels like a film.
I don't know if it was actually,
it might not have been. I know that like they had like, you know, miniature scale models and then they had sets and they had digital, like they were doing,
it was a lot of practical.
They were
effects,
doing all of that kind of stuff. But I'm talking about like, was it shot on film or was it shot on like a digital, you know, camera?
Oh,
that's what okay. I mean. I've got a funny feeling it might've actually been film. And it does.
I thought it was.
And it does feel that way. Like, it doesn't feel like the modern green screen craziness that we're all used to. Not that I think that some films like, when it's done well, like Endgame, like, I did not sit there in Endgame going like, oh, that's a nice green screen shot. I did not think about that. Like, it just, you know, like, it looked good enough. And it's, you're talking about like a giant spaceship that's just destroyed Avengers headquarters. Like, I'm not thinking about whether or not it's real because I know it's not, you know? So stuff like that. Whereas I think in The Lord of the Rings, they're dealing with so many things outside of like grand structures like Osgiliath and, you know, Orthanc and stuff like that. But when you're talking about horses and swords and stuff like that, like, so much of it is so real in terms of a scale that it's very hard to do unrealistic things with them because we all know what horses and people look like, right? You know, like, stuff like that, I found like you said, it was a labor of love. Like, the things that they do with the director, the things that they do, and I mean, this isn't necessarily it's a great performance, but it's one of the things that I always have a hard time watching. And that's, what's his name there? Noble, blanking right now. John Noble plays Denethor, the steward of Gondor.
Right.
Creeps me out.
Yeah. But that's a creepy dude.
But it's a combination of his performance that's meant to be creepy and the director filming him an inch from his nose all the time. Like, it's just uncomfortable. It's the same reason I feel when people get emotional on Instagram stories. I'm just like, I am too close to you right now. I don't even know you that well. Like, why am I in your lap during this conversation? And it feels awkward. And it, you know, going back and watching, you know, the Return of the King, like, I even had to stop because, like, it gets to that point where Faramir has been sent basically to his death to try to reclaim Osgiliath, which is not going to happen. That really poignant scene where Billy Boyd sings in the throne room and Denethor is like eating dinner sloppily.
Yeah.
And I had to stop. I was like, I'm eating dinner. We have to stop this. I can't.
Uncomfortable.
It's so gross.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He's a very gross
character. Oh, yeah. Gross in all sense of the words. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show, like, because I remember watching John Noble in, not Sliders. Can't remember the name of the film. Or the TV show had Joshua Jackson.
Someone else was in Sliders.
Yeah.
Who else was in Sliders?
John Rhys Davies was in Sliders.
John Rhys Davies.
I'm thinking about, what's his name there? Pacey from Dawson's Creek was in it. Joshua Jackson was in it. Leonard Nimoy was in the series. Anyway, John Noble plays a scientist in that is like kind of, he's basically nuts, but he's adorable nuts. He's not creepy. Like, and not a creepy at all. Like, he's batshit crazy, but he's not weird in a dangerous way. It just goes to show, like, the level of performance that Noble can bring. It just stuff like that. Like, the care from the director for, like, every shot of stuff like that really kind of shows through. And I find that, the shots were also longer. Even in 20 years, shots and sequences and films are getting a lot shorter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot harder to find a breath.
I feel like some of it comes down to, like, attention span. I think that's the fear. It's like, oh, people won't have the attention span to, like, you know, watch this, you know, or you know what I mean? And I think that is a very real fear, but, like, I like longer shots. I like lingering shots. And one of the things I like about Lord of the Rings the most, too, is that it shows masculinity in the best way because it's emotional. Like, all the men in that show are very emotional. They're very tender. They're not afraid to show affection in, you know, ways that in today's society would be considered gay AF. You know, like, you know, when Boromir is killed, Aragorn kisses him on the forehead. He's lying right on top of him, and that sounds like, you know, lewd, but it's not. It's the most, one of the most emotionally charged moments of the movie, and it's like they doesn't shy away from tender affection between men, and it is beautiful. It's so nice, And it's, but those men, like Aragorn is still, he's very manly. He's still very capable. It doesn't like take away from his capability and how much of a talented and skilled ranger he is.
Yeah.
He just, he cares about people. And that is such a nice thing to see in media. And I, we need more of that now.
And you have the flip of that too, with Eowyn being,
yes,
you know, the princess essentially, but also able to kick butt, you know.
Yeah,
she takes, she rides, yeah, with Merry into Pelennor Field, which I mean, against the wishes of Theowyn and her brother as well, which you kind of expect, and they're trying to protect, yeah, her. But it, you know, so it has those kind of like, you know, chauvinist overtones, but then she does it anyway and is successful, and the only reason that the Witch King of Angmar is destroyed, right?
Yeah.
So
I am no man. Yeah, I love that line. Yeah, it's, yeah, so great. So it's like, oh, so there's so many good moments. And the thing about like the women that are in that movie, like they're still very feminine. Yeah, it's still very feminine, but still very capable, still very powerful. Arwen is a very, very feminine woman, a very feminine elf. And but she is powerful. Mm-hmm. And you can see how powerful she is in a lot of ways. Eowyn is the exact same. She's very feminine. She's very soft. She's very delicate. She can hold a sword no problem. I think my one beef is that there's not enough women in that story. It's a very male-centric story. It's a very white-dominated story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, having more visibility and having more, you know, people of color involved, I think it would make it perfect at that point. But you know, for what it is, and again, product of its time, I understand.
Yeah.
Not understandable, not acceptable, which, you know, I mean, I'm hoping that, like, you know, that's kind of, Lord of the Rings is kind of what I've taken as like a piece of cornerstone inspiration for my personal story, to have, like, you know, something that is like, you know, high fantasy, epic, but still very human in emotion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. I agree. I also forgot how much I enjoy Aragorn in the film. Just real, mm-hmm. You get behind him and you know why. There's no mystery and there's no society telling you that you should be following the hero. It's just like, you just immediately enjoy the performance and just know that this guy is,
yep,
going to be good for everyone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fringe is the show that I was thinking about with John Noble. I had to keep people from emailing the show and exploding into their into their iPods and into their devices, going like, ah, it's Fringe. But yes, no, I watched and enjoyed Fringe quite a lot. That brings us into the Internet Minute, which is, of course, brought to you by you. The Citadel Cafe is 100% listener-supported. If you get value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. You can become a member at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Joining at any level, including the lowest level, which is the dollar level, dollar per show, will get you an invite to the member-only Discord. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, I've had all of the audio bonus episodes available to people at any level, not just the barista cut level, which is the next one up. So for as little as a latte a month, you can help keep the Sizzle Cafe live and on mic. We actually have increased. We've had one more patron join the count. We have 22 patrons as of today, October 1st. I would love to have that be 23 by the time we end October. That could be you. So that is patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. And I have a replug to share. A few years ago, I think I've shared Erin Outdoors, her Instagram account. Erin Sullivan is a nature photographer, artist and photographer really in general, on Instagram, who I quite enjoy. And she started a newsletter and made a couple jokes about how she should have done this a long time ago in the newsletter, but then also let me know that she has a brand new website in this newsletter. And I went to go take a look, and it is beautiful. It's a really, really nice website, and showcases a lot of her work, but also has some great tips for people that like to be outdoors, that like to be creative outdoors, whether you're painting, doing photography, just hiking for the enjoyment of it. She orchestrates, or used to orchestrate, travel groups and photography groups. Obviously, you know, COVID-19 has put a kibosh on that. But she's, mm-hmm, continuing to be creative in her content online. A little bit of blurb from the website is a photographer passionate about the outdoors, meaningful travel, and living deliberately. My work lives somewhere in the middle of three worlds, travel and the outdoors, photography and tech, and personal development. My goal is to show the beauty and complexity of the planet we live on and to encourage genuine connection to the outdoors, culture, people, and wildlife. She's just a joy to follow on Instagram if you're not already. Check out erinoutdoors.com. There's resources there that are free. There's also, I think she's doing some workshop stuff digitally now. Lots of different resources. Obviously, if you want to hire her as a photographer, you can do that too. But I just thought it was such a nice, cool, positive thing in my inbox this week that I wanted to share it with everybody. So erinoutdoors.com, totally worth it. And of course, her website features her work prominently, and they're beautiful photos. My gosh, she's seen some amazing stuff. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find more information about the show and links to some of the things that Megan and I talked about at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show is, of course, composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the Citadel Cafe at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or follow us by name on Twitter. Subscribe for free on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify. We're also on YouTube. But word of mouth is the easiest way to support the show. Just tell a friend about the Citadel Cafe and where they can go to listen to it. You would be surprised how far that goes. You can also leave a rating or a review on the Apple Podcasts app or your podcast platform of choice. That helps us rank higher and be more visible to people who have no idea who we are. It really goes a long way there, too. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio. You can also check out thespawnchunks.com, which is where I talk about Minecraft every week with Pixariffs. And stay tuned this Saturday, October 3rd at 1 p.m. Atlantic, 12 p.m. Eastern. I'll be joining Pixariffs at twitch.tv/Pixariffs, where he and I will be covering the Minecraft live event for the Spawn Chunks podcast. So we're going to be doing a little bit of a watch party there and commenting live on the new announcements from Mojang and the Minecraft properties as they happen this Saturday. You can follow me on social media at Joel Duggan and, of course, on Twitch at twitch.tv/Joel Duggan. Megan, where can people find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch at @OMeganTownsend.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.